And welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us. We are with you each week trying to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. And, of course, we like to spend time from time to time talking to special guests to find out what's going on in their life and what's going on in the legal lives of the of the state of Washington, at least. And, of course, we are broadcasting across the globe, apparently. So we'll say hello.
Whoa.
I know, Brian Sontag is. Well, let me just introduce Brian. Brian Sontag, Washington State Auditor, welcome.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't realize you could reach the entire globe from Faircrest.
Yeah, we are actually global from Faircrest, Washington at the moment.
I knew you were international before because I'm sure that Seattle station reached into Canada.
You know, we did. We used to get calls from BC sometimes.
See, international.
And we were indeed international. I guess we've hit it again. And, in fact, we're talking to the members of the armed forces across the globe as well, which is kind of fun.
And possibly intergalactic.
Possibly intergalactic.
I don't know where this goes. That's...
One day we'll be getting a call from someone on, like, who stopped by Mars or something on the way. Somewhere. I don't know where they went.
Okay. Could be.
You never know.
No.
You never know. But we appreciate your taking time to stop by. You know, of course, we did programs before when we were on the old-fashioned radio, I guess.
The air.
The air.
<Yeah.
laughs> Now, I don't know. We're kind of on the air, but it's internet air, I guess. And so it's kind of funny being inside this cable, don't you think?
I don't know. It's confining.
It's confining.
But, yeah.
I feel a bit like a sausage, maybe. I don't know. Squeezing through the... I shouldn't go there, I guess. Yeah.
Well,
we're clearly having way too much fun, and we're going to continue that trend. That's one thing I've never been accused of as being too serious, and so especially when it comes to the law. Now, there are, of course, you know, serious aspects to law and other things, and I guess really we don't have to have those, do we? If you want to slip those off, see, it's a little different, isn't it? We're kind of, you know, this part of doing radio, by the way, is...
I thought that was part of the deal. You got to wear the headphones.
I know, you do, and you can. It's totally optional, I think. We may get messages from Jeff here, too. Producer/engineer Jeff is at the helm.
All right.
Taking good care of us, and every so often I need to glance over to see if he says, "What are you guys doing?" But part of the fun, I think, of radio, I think more than like TV... And one day we'll probably be doing YouTube also, I think, at some point. So I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. But part of the fun is you get to kind of tell people what's actually going on in the background. And I always kind of enjoy that when I listen to radio.
Yeah. And of course, it's just up to their imagination.
That's right.
They don't know if you're telling them the straight deal or
not. Oh, I love it. Of course, you were there when we had, remember, J.P. Patches on.
I do. I remember one time. You talk about special guests. I got to be on the program when you had both a former Supreme Court Justice, Phil Talmadge, and J.P. Patches.
Pretty
and
wild.
And I joined them one Sunday morning.
Not bad, huh?
That was good.
That's a pretty good crew we used to have hanging out. And we'll have a good crew hanging out again, as evidenced by today.
Yeah. I mean, I heard somebody call in and say it was two clowns and one guy who used to live by the city dump.
Now, for those of you in Afghanistan, you may not realize what we're talking about, but that's part of the fun too, you know. So, let me mention too, as we work through our weeks and become a podcast too. We're becoming a podcast right after this broadcast, and you can always email us. And I recommend emailing Jeff. He'll kind of maybe maintain more sanity. I don't know. But you can send an email to jeff@bobpittman.com anytime and check in with Jeff and say, "What are those guys doing? What's this Pittman guy doing?" And he'll be able to maybe help. I don't know. But if you have a question, too, it's okay to do that. And we're going to we're able to take calls. It'll probably be on some future broadcast, but we may even get a call today. You never know. And people can call us at 253-471-9694. See if I remember that right, huh? And you'll be able to call in with a question when we have a guest, or if we're just calling in with general legal questions. And I don't know if Brian started answering general legal questions. I don't think so, but you never know.
Hey, I spent 14 and a half years in the county clerk's office with the courts.
Oh,
you know?
Man, that's true.
Yeah, I know what a writ is and a subpoena and all that stuff.
I know. It's kind of dangerous, you know.
Yeah. We started when I was the county clerk. We implemented Pierce County's mandatory arbitration system.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I didn't realize that occurred at that time.
That was in 1981 or two.
You know, it's interesting because before that, of course, there just wasn't anything at all. It was just you're going to court.
The threshold of either district court, or if it's higher than that, you go to superior court, nothing in between.
Yeah.
In fact, the first year that we had Pierce County Superior Court's mandatory arbitration system, they heard the equivalent caseload of 1.5 full-time Superior Court judges.
Wow.
Now, you know, that might not seem like an awful lot today, but, you know, given that long ago, that was pretty significant additional cost to the county other than the cost to pay those arbitrators, and they were getting the same as a pro tem judge.
But see, that's really significant. And I don't know if we could work our magic wand and come up with something new now to relieve the burden on the courts right now. It would be great, too.
Well, I'm sure they will. Yeah. I mean, there's...
Maybe the Internet will.
There's a lot smarter people working in the court system than I was then. And I'm sure they'll come up with some ideas as well. But it worked very well. In fact, at that time, King County was the only other county with an arbitration system in place. And we started up Pierce County's with no additional staff.
Wow.
I wrote out the forms on a legal tablet. Whoa. And had them printed up. And, you know, let's just get it going and see where it heads.
Well, and obviously it's worked out really well.
Worked out really well. We had a great committee putting it together. Yeah. Fritz Hayes was a Superior Court judge. Actually, at that time, he was president of the Bar Association.
Oh.
Kelly Arnold was a Superior Court judge. He was on the committee, as well as Charlotte Chalker and myself.
Yeah, names that are familiar to me and hopefully to listeners as well. But, the law is always changing, and people don't think about what affects it. I mean, even something like that, the idea of the arbitration, the mandatory arbitration, coming in and really changing for the better, I think.
Well, it was about getting people better, quicker, faster access to the court system.
Right, because without access, there really isn't any justice, one would say.
That's a
good
point.
You've got to have access. Yeah. And that's a tough one, even when people are deciding whether they can get an attorney or they have to represent themselves. I think we like to think that we have a fairly friendly environment for non-lawyers, but I don't know. Some days you really wonder. Look at some of the terms we use and the forms and even a thing like probate, and someone's always calling me and saying something other than letters testamentary. It's always something, you know, letters of testament or some,
yes, yes.
I mean, some sort of, because it's a strange term anyway, you know.
Well, it is, and all those old terms that we inherited from, you know, the old court systems back east and even across the Atlantic Ocean are still being used.
That's true.
And whether it's a probate or a civil action or anything else, if people don't get access, if they can't get into the court system, where are they? And I probably think today, you asked about how people representing themselves or pro se litigants are treated, probably better than they used to be.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
But I still don't think probably very well compared to it's a system of lawyers and attorneys and judges and, you know, everybody's in a hurry.
Yeah.
And if you come into their courtroom and you're not as prepared as...
Well, and you're not going to be if you're not a lawyer.
You're not going to be. You probably don't get the same respect.
And some lawyers aren't going to be prepared either, but that's a different story.
Yeah, that happens too.
That's true. All right, so let's progress a few years come up to... State auditor days. I mean, you spent time in between, sandwiched in between as the county auditor.
Yep, did that for a while.
And I think people get confused, by the way. A county auditor really isn't, I mean, we use that word auditor, but it's not the same thing at all as the state auditor and the use of that term. I don't even know where we came up with the term auditor on the county level, do you?
Well, it's in the state constitution.
Okay.
That's the only...
I should know that.
I mean, it's there, but it really doesn't have that same kind of meaning. County auditors don't audit.
Yeah.
County auditors run elections and licensing. And
very important, of course.
Very important job.
Recording of deeds and things like
that. Of deeds and contracts and properties. And in this county, the auditor also does business licenses and animal control, I think, is now part of the county auditor's office.
But and we still get marriage licenses.
Yep. as well.
I remember doing that many years ago.
Yeah, I did too. In fact, we're hoping that it counts. But I signed my own marriage license application because I was the county auditor at the time.
Wow. Now, you didn't do that to try to have an out, did you?
Like, no.
Don't answer. And I want to answer.
No, no. I'm hoping that it keeps me in.
That's right. Yeah.
No, not at all. And the state auditor's office, we do audit.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the job of the state auditor is to audit and check the books and accounts and finances of about 2,700 different units of government around the state.
Why?
Local governments. You know, cities, counties, fire districts. In eastern Washington, there are mosquito control districts.
Oh, that's great.
And we audit their books as well.
Because they do have books, don't they? I mean,
well, they do. Yeah. Anybody who's responsible for any public money comes under our purview.
Yeah.
Large state agencies, DSHS and Department of Transportation.
Purchase of fly swatters then in the mosquito districts? That's probably not.
Perhaps. You know, I think probably we... we spend more time auditing those folks than we really need to. But state law says that we'll audit everybody at least every 3 years. So,
well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, of course, an audit, I imagine, for a really small operation isn't going to be real, I assume, not real intensive. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it doesn't need to be because we're the public auditor.
Right.
And that means we've been there since that. Sure. Entity's existence, and we're going to be there into the future.
Sure.
We can cycle the things we look at. I mean, if it's a large city like Seattle or Tacoma or, you know, a small fire district, we can cycle the things we look at.
Sure, that makes sense, of course. And then you've got the big units that I have to believe you're sending a team in at times to.
Well, yeah, you take a look at some of those large ones like Transportation and Department of Social and Health Services, and we are there pretty much continually. We're literally starting an audit about the time we're finishing up the previous one. So
right now, it's all state entities, I guess. I mean, not just it's all agencies, but now, for example, the governor's office has a budget. I'm assuming too to run the office, and is that subject to audit as well?
It is indeed.
Interesting.
The governor's. Budget office is the Office of Financial Management, and we audit the Office of Financial Management.
Right.
We audit every other agency that reports directly to the governor as well.
Sure. But, I mean, even in a you look at a prosecutor's office, let's say, you know, we're in Pierce County at the moment. Pierce County Prosecutor's Office obviously is spending state money.
Yes.
And they have to be accountable, I'm guessing, just like any agency, I mean.
That's the word. That's the only issue for this office is accountability.
And
you define accountability, I do anyway, as government being open, accessible, responsive, responsible, a government that listens to people, and when it talks to them, tells them the truth.
Yeah. Boy, that says a lot. And with that, if everybody... believe that, we'd probably be in pretty good shape. Maybe at the national level, we need a little
simple.
Bit of that.
Well, I think they do. I think they do at all levels.
But. Yeah, and I assume there's some attempt at all levels to do something of that. You know, I mean, to make people accountable. But,
well, there is. At the federal level, there's the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, and they're responsible for those same kinds of functions. And that's an independent office because it's appointed by Congress for, I believe, like a 6-year term.
Right.
Whereas this office, the office I hold, is independent because the founders of this state made it a statewide elected office and put it in the state constitution, which means I don't work for the governor or the legislature.
Which I think is really good. I mean, in the position like yours where you really are dealing with accountability of all these, everybody in the state. If you were appointed by, say, the governor, there's at least the appearance.
Then that would be that, who I work for.
Yeah, right. You work, and, yeah. and even though a person, and you might say, well, I'm really doing everything I should do, and I'm not going to worry about whether I get fired or not, you still, the appearance, at least, of a possible conflict, I guess, would be there.
That's so important.
Yeah.
You know, there are national standards for auditing, like there are for anything else.
Sure.
But those they also address appearance.
Yeah.
You know, and, and that perception. Perception is power.
That's true.
You know, it's said often, but that's true. And if that perception is that, you know, you're too close, then you are.
Right.
And so the fact that the founders of this state made it that independent and made it a statewide elected office is pretty, it's fairly unique and I think a very critical distinction.
Yeah. Well, I think
not all states elect
an
auditor.
No, I and I think it makes a whole lot of sense to be an elected office, needless to say. And you know, if to the to a person, you know, citizen of the state working their normal job and part of a family, raising a family, educating kids. I mean, it's not something that they think about every day, but it really you really do have an impact on the everyday life of a person. And a person knowing that there is integrity, hopefully, in the system is I would hope would make us even feel better about our about the jobs we're doing. I mean, even me, I'm here, I'm a small business person too, in that I have a law practice. It's a slightly different kind of business maybe, but there is a business aspect to it.
Well, sure.
And accountability too, even for, I'm accountable to clients obviously and to the Bar Association.
Absolutely.
I want to know that I'm doing the right things when I help people. But knowing, I think if we lose faith in the basic, governmental operations, I mean, we don't have, I mean, talk about legal system going haywire. I mean, we don't have, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Nothing really matters.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. An office like this, people expect and deserve their government to operate well.
Right.
Or to at least know that somebody's watching out for their tax dollar to the degree that we're able to look to make sure that systems and controls are in place to safeguard those dollars.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, this office doesn't register the brightest blip on people's political radar screens.
No, I suppose not.
And you know, it probably shouldn't. People aren't going to sit around the dinner table and discuss, you know, well, you know what the state auditor did today. Probably not going to happen. But the work of the office is essential to good government happening every day.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, if you have... I mean, just picking on a prosecutor's office, you have mismanagement. I mean, we don't. I mean, if we did have mismanagement at a that kind of level, pick any level or any group, I mean, it would impact people's lives left and right, and or, you know, the system would fail.
In fact, the prosecutor here in Pierce County, as well as the sheriff, the county executive, and several other departments in Pierce County government have asked us to come in and do some additional work with our new performance audit authority.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to be helping Pierce County put in some measurable goals and objectives that they haven't been able to do before.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's neat.
That is. Now, let's take that. I mean,
now, again, Bob, not a headline grabber.
No,
not the hot, sexy issue. But, you know, it's part of doing the job that people expect.
Yeah, well, and it probably should be a headline grabber. I mean, it's...
Well, I don't know about that, but it is important.
At least down at the lower left on the, or right on the,
okay,
on the front page.
Okay, on D12 or something. Yeah.
I think I put it in the front section. Of course, have you seen the local papers lately? There aren't too many sections.
Well, there is no D section. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're after the news of the Mariners or the Rainiers or something, which is kind of fun stuff too. By
it
the way,
is
on the Rainiers. Are you going to go to the? They have a playoff game coming up.
Well,
they?
I might. They're going to be playing up in Seattle at Safeco.
Safeco Field.
And of course, that's because the renovation has already begun at Cheney Stadium.
That's right.
A ballpark, you know. Yeah. We grew up going to.
Yeah. And you're intimately familiar with. I think you spent a lot of time going there with.
Oh, I did.
with your dad and family members to
absolutely
play games over the years. So that's kind of exciting that we're getting that in Cheney Stadium. Now, Cheney Stadium, let's take that as that's not a governmental agency that runs it, or is there anything that?
Well, yes, it actually it is. It's run by. It was co-operated by the city and the county.
Okay.
And I believe it's the city that operates that now.
Okay.
And the county operates the county-city building. They used to jointly operate that, too. I think they split them up.
So that's something that the auditor's office would theoretically get involved in terms of even like Cheney Stadium.
Yeah, not their day-to-day operations, but... just as part of the city business,
sure, okay,
and how they operate facilities,
because you do go into the city as well to audit what's going on with the city, and sometimes I'm sure that's lots of fun.
sometimes it gets interesting. You know, the 20 years I spent in county government here in Pierce County, I was on the receiving end of audits by this office, so I think that perspective helps a little too.
I would think so. Let's go back to performance audits. Now, that's something that was a very hot topic for, and I guess it still is, but it was a very hot topic for a long time, and it was a real struggle, as I recall, to try and even get them going. I mean, can you give us a nutshell history on performance audits and getting them
sure.
the ability to do them?
I'll try to give you a quick timeline. When I first ran for this office in 1992, Washington was the only state in the country with a law on the books that said the auditor could not do performance audits.
Oh.
We could do financial audits. We could look at compliance areas. But we couldn't look at performance and really measure outcomes and results of government programs. And I think that's an essential piece that was missing for a long time. It was back in 1972 that the GAO that I mentioned before, the Government Accountability Office, established standards for auditing government agencies. And that included financial auditing, compliance auditing, and performance auditing. So this, it's not like it was a new, just a new fad or idea that we had along the way. Washington was actually very late to that table. And we proposed legislation every year from 1993 through 2005, and it actually took a citizen initiative that was passed in 2005 directing the state auditor to do performance audits of state and local government, provided a fairly stable funding source, although the legislature tried to take that away a couple of years ago, too.
Yeah.
And it's allowed us to begin doing some really relevant work that's measuring not just whether government's doing things right, but really getting to the heart of, are they doing the right things?
Very good. And that's something that... that's something that should make headlines, is as we find out that either they are or they aren't.
Well, some of them have, and that's generally when we find out they aren't.
Sure.
The Port of Seattle a few years ago, we did a performance audit there, and we found that they had misspent $97 million. The good part of that is, however, you look at how they're operating today and organized and managed, and it's night and day difference.
Terrific.
Port of Seattle is one of the best operating public entities in this state. So,
and one could argue that it took the performance audit to really spur them on.
I think it did, that and then a federal investigation afterwards. But
that'll always help.
It provided some impetus, a little motivation.
Yeah, a little. Now, there were no criminal matters that came out of that.
There were not. There was rumored for a long time.
Yeah.
That the FBI was going to charge somebody with something. They did not. And that's a good thing, too. I mean, they went in, they did do a very thorough investigation. There was nothing to charge anyone with, and it allowed the port to get on with their business.
Well, you know, let's continue our discussion about performance audits, but let's see if we can slip out. Now, you know, we have our new venture here, so... let me just ask Jeff here to help us out with our, let's have the ad, let's do that. And we're going to slip out and continue our discussion with Brian Sontag right here on the Legal Line Network.
And we having a commercial?
We're actually going to have a it's an amazing.
Wow.
But you'll be interested. It's kind of a good, it's a good one. It's a commercial for a really neat service that's out there, and we just got to ask Jeff if he'll get that queued up and run that for us. You know, like I say, the fun thing about radio, especially when it's live, I like live stuff where you can tell it's not canned. So we'll continue our discussion about performance audits with Brian Sontag right after this brief word. One of the best legal bargains has to be the bar-sponsored lawyer referral services. For about $35, maybe $45 or so, you can have a half-hour consultation with an attorney who works in your area of concern. So, for example, if you have a real estate issue, you'll meet with a real estate attorney. If you have questions about a contract, you'll meet with an attorney who speaks the right version of legalese. Keep in mind that you have a half hour to discuss your legal problem. This is not a lot of time, but usually enough to determine if you need or want to engage a lawyer further. But you must use your time efficiently. Before you meet with the lawyer, write out a brief statement of the facts and write down your questions for the lawyer. If the questions are written down, you'll probably remember to ask them. When you meet with the lawyer, don't spend time talking about other things. Don't talk about the game last night or the weather. You have a limited amount of time, and you need to talk about your legal problem. In King County, you can call 206-267-7010. In Pierce County, you can call 253-383-3432. If you go to the website for the Washington State Bar Association, you'll find more information in the For the Public section. Look under How to Find Legal Help, and then under Lawyer Referral Services. And, of course, you can always go to bobpittman.com. And we continue with this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman. You're listening to the Legal Line Network. Each week we try to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. And, you know, we always, over the years, were able to educate, but without people realizing that we're being educated. That's the trick. Maybe that's the trick to education.
If they could have done that in school, I might have finished faster.
But I think, I don't know. I mean, we all need to learn about stuff. I mean, I think really everybody needs to know about things. I mean, it sounds, you know, people say, oh, the three branches of government, you know, they don't want to hear about it. But, you know, we really do. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to go back to school here, but I think we all need to be aware of what's going on. And, you know, you even look at you look at the issues that are in the newspaper and on the news, you know, CNN tonight will have stuff. And if you look at it, if you have a better understanding of government and the law and all that, I think you'll understand the news better, I think.
Well, I think so, too. Government, you talk about demystifying the law. Well, demystifying government and these branches and what they do, it's so easy to sit back and say, that's them.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do.
Right.
I don't trust any of them anyway. Yeah. So, you know.
But it affects us.
Every single day.
Every day. It really does. And so we need to be thinking through. And when we see something in the paper about Port of Seattle, that use that as an example.
Sure.
Well, you can then know, you say, oh, okay, that makes sense. I know that they get audited, and here is that performance audit that we all voted on back
in 05,
I mean, to get. And that's something that we all as citizens were able to actually put into effect, and you actually get to implement. That had to be a job and a half to try to figure out how to even implement the law. I can't even imagine.
Well, we were plenty busy beforehand. it was like taking on and creating another state agency within our department to carry this out.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you're right, it's certainly been challenging, but boy, a lot of fun too to put a new program together, to put something in place that had not existed before, that provides some real value, helps government get better, perform better, and better meet the expectations of citizens. Well, that's a big deal to me.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
I mean, I don't want you to really get the impression that I'm some kind of, you know, government statistician nerd type guy over here, and you know me better.
Yeah.
This is important stuff.
Well, and if you think of people in the private sector, I mean, you know, take my little operation as a law office. I mean, I need to be thinking about how things are performing and am I doing everything in a good, efficient manner and helping people to the best of my abilities and operating in such a way that I can help more people, let's say, or at least help the people I'm working with in an efficient manner so they really get something valuable from the relationship. I mean, then over in the government, we're... I seem to be picking on the prosecutor's office. I don't know why, but
lawyers, I mean, Bob lawyers.
That's lawyers. Yeah, it's a bunch of lawyers. I know we have a really good prosecutor here in town too. So,
well, but you know, if you don't meet the needs of your clients, you're not going to get more clients either.
No, that's true.
Now, government doesn't have that same issue.
That's right,
and I think that's why it needs to continually be addressed in government agencies that they always be focused on performance. Management, performance budgeting, performance auditing, then to see that it's there. But that's critical. All of us in government need to understand, realize, and remember that it's not our money that we're working with, and it's not our work that we're even doing. The operative word is public.
And I think sometimes that gets forgotten in some offices, whether it be private or public, and it's to all of our detriment when that happens.
It is.
So now... How did you determine the first performance audits to do? I mean, if my recollection, there was nothing specified in the legislation, was there?
The only language in the initiative that was passed, it said that we will start with the largest and costliest governments first.
Okay.
Now, you know, you can interpret that a few ways. I mean, one way is, well, we will start with the largest and move on down the list.
Uh-huh.
Or you can say we'll start with the largest and until we're ever finished with them, we'll stay with the largest.
Yeah.
So that means we'll be at the Port of Seattle Sound Transit and Department of Transportation
forever.
Of the state forever.
That's
and,
<right. laughs>
and you literally could. But as a matter of fact, we're just finishing up a follow-up audit, if you will, of the Port of Seattle, identifying... Well, how have they done since we reported that that audit 3 years ago?
Right.
You know, well, what have they done since? Have they put new policies and things in place? Are they organized better? Do they manage better? And I think people are going to be very happy. I know the port will be happy when that report comes out because it's going to indicate that they've done a great job.
Sure. And, of course, you take the Port of Seattle, people say, well, how does that impact me? Well, of course, that's the airport.
It is.
That's
huge.
That really is. Then it really is the port, all the activities that I assume that go on in Seattle, I guess, in terms of
it's not just the waterfront.
And, it isn't, but it is the waterfront, but it's so much more.
Yeah, it is.
It does affect our everyday lives.
Goods and cargo that come through Seattle by, sea or air.
Sure, which is a tremendous volume. It's hard to picture that volume. And Tacoma, of course, you get the largest ports, I assume, are Seattle, and then Tacoma, I assume, must be one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, they're two of the largest on the West Coast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so you've got a lot of work. You got work that you can be doing this forever. Obviously, we'll be doing this forever.
Well, I'm going to be doing something
somebody
forever.
Somebody will be doing this forever.
Yes,
But now, have performance audits that are getting involved, has it taken away from the normal audit function of the auditor's office? Have you had to allocate somehow or resources? I don't know if that's a fair question or not. But,
oh, it's a great question. It hasn't taken away from our work. I mean, we're still doing all that other audit work that really is so essential.
Right.
And that's where our office built its credibility was on that other work and how professional we do that. Performance audit gets more of the attention you know, by citizens, by legislators, just because it's been so talked about
sure.
since 92 and 3.
Right.
That it does capture some of the attention that way, but it would be wrong for us administratively to treat it that way.
Right.
In fact, we have to remind people outside the office that the other parts of our work are equal. None of them are greater or more important. They're all pieces.
Sure.
When I described the GAO putting the audit standards in place, they addressed performance, compliance, and financial auditing as three equal pieces.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it makes sense, too, because when you get into the audits, one thing that comes to my mind, maybe just being a lawyer, is there have to be times when you it isn't just mistakes that are coming up, but there is actually fraud, criminal activity, I suppose, but oh. certainly fraud. I guess fraud I'd throw in with the criminal stuff too. I guess it's
yeah.
not just people making mistakes, but and that's got to be something that I assume is discovered sometimes through the audits that the office does.
Yeah, it sure is. We probably investigate and report on about 36 frauds a year. Now, I think the most effective thing we can do in the area of fraud is in the training and prevention.
Right.
If we come along and do an audit, we do post-audit work.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in the year 2010, we're auditing activities of some agency that happened in 2009,
okay.
so we can report it in 2011.
Right.
That's
okay.
good work, but it's, you know, not
right.
It's not today's news all
no,
the time.
No.
And so if we can help train local governments, especially, how to detect, root out, prevent
right.
fraud from happening, well, the ones prevented, that's even better.
Sure.
And so we spend a lot of our time working with local governments, state agencies as well, to help eliminate and prevent those things in the first place.
Well, yeah, and I think that, I mean, it actually helps the people who might otherwise be committing their crimes, too. Because I have to believe some of the, especially some of the financial stuff, part of it must be crimes of opportunity, I guess, where...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, someone's working in some agency somewhere, and there are loose standards, let's say. I'm just speculating. There's an opportunity, and they're in trouble, or whatever's going on in their life, and they see an opportunity. If the opportunity doesn't present... I realize you could say, well, the person might do it anyway or go somewhere else, but I don't know, maybe by taking away that opportunity too, we're actually helping that person out.
A lot of these principles are the same,
uh-huh.
Bob, if you're raising kids or whatever you're doing,
yeah.
if you remove some of the temptation,
yeah.
sometimes yeah. The bad thing won't happen.
Well, yeah.
And that's exactly true. We have, I could name instances where our fraud investigator has gone to interview, for instance, an elderly lady who's a clerk treasurer someplace
yeah.
who had been skimming off a little bit of money every month for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And because she's the only person who handles the books, the money in, the money out, nobody ever detected it for years and years. And a couple I can think of right now where they were so happy that we finally came in and wow. found them so they could stop.
Wow.
You know, and that is a sad thing. We found another case where somebody was falsifying purchase invoices mm-hmm. and requisitions and
sure.
selling off equipment to support a drug habit.
Yeah.
You know, where I mean, really these people need the help for those specific things
sure.
earlier, but this is the fallout and the symptom.
Yeah.
But there's some, we investigate a lot of frauds. One recent was in a county treasurer's office here in the state where, oh man, I think the total was somewhere over $600,000 over a number
wow.
of years.
Wow. And that's all essentially taxpayer money. I mean, it's.
Oh, you bet it is. Investigated by our office with taxpayer money, prosecuted
yeah.
by their prosecutor in that county with taxpayer money.
And probably the defendant, defense counsel.
Probably the defense counsel. And if that person goes to jail, they'd be in public housing.
Yeah, that's true. So, boy, we're footing the bill.
Yes. So The better we can do at prevention, the better.
Well, that's true. And prevention is so important. I mean, it's funny how these themes run through our lives. I mean, you mentioned even with, with raising kids or health or whatever. I mean, if you can prevent issues from ever occurring, you're so far ahead. And, you know, I do estate planning in my practice. And if we can sort of set things up and prevent issues from coming up, if you can have things like powers of attorney in place so there doesn't have to be a guardianship, well, everybody's better off. And it's less costly. Even guardianships, there's talk about use of state money. In fact, you must get involved. There are obviously, at least in the offices that you would be auditing, there must be guardianship stuff.
Oh, absolutely. When we're in the Department of Social and Health Services, all the different programs they have.
Yeah.
Of course, my ears still perk up every time you want to talk about probate. Yeah. Because one of my jobs in the county clerk's office, before I was the county clerk, I was the probate clerk.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I used to type letters, testamentary, and letters of administration.
Oh, that's terrific.
So, it just kind of...
Well, and I know, I mean, people actually come in and look at those files, don't they?
Oh, yes, and I mean, they are all public records.
Yeah. And it kind of surprises people a lot of times that there is that there are people who troop through the various clerk's offices around the state and sort of plow through the files to see what they can find. They're what I tend to call, most of them are what I call sharks and vultures. Of course, I'm a professional shark, so it's okay. I've got a card that says it's okay for
me. You belong to the club.
I belong to the club, that's right, you know. I don't know, I have to ask the Bar Association. Maybe they could do that for the, no, better not, on the emblem, I guess. Probably shouldn't be putting a shark.
Or at least a shark skin folder for the card.
Maybe that could be.
I like that.
I know. I get in trouble sometimes with I have to be careful about not getting too much trouble with the Bar Association. I know the University of Washington Law School, I think, was trying to sell me one time. They were looking for another law school was willing to adopt me and say that I had graduated from there.
That's pretty good.
Well, you know,
if you had gone to the UPS law school, they sold the whole school.
They sold, it'd be okay. That could have been their reason. But, you know, I would, of course, tell, they don't have the plaque up anymore on the hallways, but the competition for the magnetic business card throwing that we did at the UW Law School, third year students, of course, getting ready to go out and take the bar, and they'd run an ambulance down 45th.
Oh, and everybody would go chase it.
Well, you'd have to throw the magnetic business card against it.
Oh.
And, I mean, I was good, let's face it.
This was practice for future employment.
Oh, I held the record for, you know, hitting the, and they would speed the ambulance up as it came into the intersection. And I would tag it every time. I had, like, it was... I forget the speed. They took the plaque down. There was a plaque there in the hallways.
And this is a real ambulance on a real call.
Oh, yeah. They would. This was, you know, I mean, these days they don't do that kind of stuff in law schools. I don't know what they do.
Boy.
But, I mean, we used to have, you know, some good classes like that and the competitions that we did. You know, people got into the silly moot court stuff, you know, but I went for the... You know, for the
well, yours
stuff.
Was practical.
Oh, mine was very practical.
I mean, as a struggling attorney, at any stage, you need clients.
Oh no, being able to hit that ambulance.
Yeah, so when it pulls up to the stop and the loved ones show up, there's Bob's card. You know, sticking right to the back.
Let's give Bob a call. I mean, that's how I've been able to finance my lifestyle.
I mean, were you able to ever get it to cling to the door?
I was good.
That's got to be a prime location.
No, it was a terrific look. I mean, it was great, and we did that, and we had another class that was good was the page flipping class, and we'd you know, so we had quite a few classes in the old days at the UW Law School, and I don't know that may be why they tried to sell. I had heard from Seattle University one time that they'd been offered the rights to me, and that they had declined.
They declined.
I don't understand.
They
would have tried to pick me up.
One, you know, you know, I bet you still had an option or two left and a couple more good years on those knees.
I don't understand it, you know. It's really sad, you know. But we got to, you know, try to take this all very seriously, as you know.
And well, I mean, it's serious work, but part of that has to be, you know, getting your name out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I first started practicing is when the advertising first came in. Not to go back too far, but, you know, for years you weren't able to advertise.
Right.
And of course, as we moved into the 80s and stuff, you were able to. And, of course, we have now.
It still cracks me up to watch Dave Buffalini on TV at night. So, yeah.
Well, I keep watching.
I've known David forever. But
I was going to check and see if one of them wanted to of course, do an ad on Legal Line here. And I'm going to check on it, but it was for some drug, and I'd have to do the voice work for it, I guess, too. But the idea would be if you've died from the use of this drug, give us a call. And so I'm still kind of working on exactly how, but you've seen those ads, I think.
I have indeed.
And if you listen to the wording, it includes if you have died or you whatever. Of course, they say you or a loved one have died. Give us a call. I keep picturing somebody calling who's,
hey, I took that drug. Killed me. I need some help.
I mean, that's the kind of case I'm looking for, you know. That would force me into personal injury.
You'd only need one of those.
That's right.
And, you know, and I think you could just kind of coast on podcasts forever after that.
I think we'd finance Legal Line for the indefinite future, you know.
How long has Legal Line been going, Bob? I'm going to interview you for a minute.
I know. Well, you know, we started... We started, there was a brief pre-Legal Line phase when I did the, Talk of the Town, Barbara Lord Nelson program?
Oh, I do indeed. I was on there several times.
And Barbara actually gave me my start.
Liked you.
Yeah, she's a very nice person, and she had a fun program that she would run from restaurants.
Yes.
I forget the name of the but there was a restaurant.
Oh, she moved around.
Oh, yeah. She, and we even did it from,
think it had anything to do with her ability to pay any of the bills.
I don't think so.
No, I do not believe that.
And but I remember one time, it was at the Lakewood Mall.
Yep. Oh, yes.
And Dixie Lee Ray was a guest with me. I was there, too.
Oh, man.
And we were around a little table like this one here, actually, that where you're working from with that microphone.
You know, Dixie went to our high school, Bob.
You know, I didn't know that until...
Well, not with us.
Yeah, no. That's true. But I didn't realize she was a stadium graduate,
yeah.
I have to say. And that was news when I think I saw that just the other day.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about that.
I hadn't realized that.
Stadium High School Centennial Award for her. That's right.
Yeah. But that was what, so we started. She had invited me on. I had written a letter to the editor, and it was talking about a lawyer's responsibility to educate the public. And I was kind of annoyed at lawyers that day. And I had never written a letter to the editor before,
Good
but I wrote
you.
This. And they printed it, and they called it, like, at the heading was, like, lawyer's responsibility or something. And and her producer had picked it up and called me and said, hey, do you want to come on and talk about the letter? And I said, well, I guess so. I had never thought about it before.
Oh, why not?
And so we went on. It was kind of fun, and she invited me back. And so we would she couldn't take call-ins on that particular program. And so people would maybe call a question in during the week, and then mm-hmm. she would have a couple questions, and we did a little thing. And the Pierce County reporter, Don Moore, remember him?
I sure do, from Cairo Radio.
Had picked it up, and then a friend of mine, Pete Jemming, contacted, I want to say the Jim, I think went directly to Jim French up on Cairo.
Oh.
And had suggested me for a piece up there, and then I got a call, and they had asked me to come up and do a little weekend thing with Don Moyer and Rebecca Hale.
I remember that.
And so I went on a weekend on Cairo and did that, and people called in with, you know, the funny thing is people like to call in with their legal questions, and there aren't really many places where you can do that.
No, there aren't. There aren't.
You know, there are programs that, even now, there's, Handel on the Law, Bill Handel does a program,
right.
National program. It's different than what we did. We actually... You know, talk about your legal question, try to point you in the right direction with regard to, you know, what's going on, and try to get you going. Have a little fun with it, admittedly, and mm-hmm. slightly irreverent at times, but and the formula worked. So we did that, and then I got invited back up to have lunch one day with Andy Ludlam was the program director, and Kristen Ford, now it was Kristen Propes back then, and they said, "Hey, you want to do a your own program on Saturday nights?"
Yeah.
And we're gonna move away from some of the national stuff like the Bruce Williams show.
Ah, yeah.
And so I said, "Well, sure, I'll try it." You know, I was, you know, stupid, I guess, or what, I willing, you know.
Willing and fun.
Yeah, so I said, okay. So we started on a Saturday night, and it was there was a Cougar game. The station used to carry the Cougars.
Mm.
And I was scheduled to go on from 6 to 8, and then John Carlson was going to come on after me, and did come on after me. I think that was his first regular radio stint.
Oh, okay.
He was doing a TV thing at the time. On Cairo
on
TV.
Cairo with
John Procaccino. No.
John Gezzo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And so, anyway, so we're there, and the Cougar game was going on, and I thought, oh, in a way, I was a little bit relieved. I thought, oh, boy, that's, you know, I'm dodging a bullet, I almost feel like, you know, what am I doing? I must be crazy. And so, the game's going on, and I figure, well, we'll start it next week. And they said, oh, no, we're going to start it. We're going to split the time. You and John will split your time. And so I said, okay. So I got on, and I thought, why is anybody going to call? And sure enough, a call came in. I mean, it was, I think the first, my recollection is the first call was from a woman, and I'll stand corrected if someone out there remembers differently, but it was one of the first ones. Anyway, was a woman who wanted to leave all of her assets to her cat.
Hmm.
And so that got us started off on the show. And for 17 years we ran, 14 on Cairo, and then we shifted over for 3 years on to KTTH.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately. And then I signed off voluntarily. The station had changed ownership, and a lot of things are changing in the regular radio business.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of a tough go right now, and they were looking at ways to cut, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going to walk out on my own 2 feet rather than be thrown out the door. And so so I said, you know, I'm gone. And
it helps when you're looking for that next gig, you know.
Well, you know what was funny is, I don't know if I should say this or not, but anyway, I sent up a nice note saying, hey, you know, I've decided to stop the program and wish you well and blah, blah, blah. And they never responded to my letter. I turned in my key card because you had to have a key to get it. And they never sent me my last check.
Oh.
And at first I thought, yeah,
you know a lawyer?
Are you guys crazy? I mean, it would be so easy for me to do this. And then I got to thinking, you know what? It's okay. It'll be a great story that I'll have for years.
Well, that's true.
How about how they didn't pay me my last check even, you know? So so I stopped, and I wasn't going to do anything. And then, lo and behold, here we are on the Internet, and we're starting up our program again online. And so what happens, as you know, is we do our live broadcast for a while, and then it becomes a podcast that is in a searchable archive kind of format. So if you want to check later, let's say 6 months, or someone wants to know, I think Bob talked to Brian. I want to listen to that. So they'll be able to listen to you.
Yeah, I'm still not sure I understand all that.
I know.
I understand this part, headphones, microphone, talk to Bob.
It's very much like the radio.
I've done this before.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I just learned how to reboot.
Yeah.
So a podcast, broadcast.
I know. Well, you'll be able to go to
upload,
Bob.
Upload, download.
Be able to go to bobpittman.com and go to the Legal Line page, and there will be it won't be there probably till tomorrow now, but there'll be the podcast, and people will be able to listen. I was talking to...
I could download that into the computer
and
then put it on my iPod thing.
That's
and
right.
Play it in my ears when I'm riding the bike at the Y.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, that's just fascinating.
That's right. Isn't that great? And people will be doing that tomorrow.
Yeah.
You won't know. Other people will be listening to you, see.
Thinking it's
on their podcast.
That we're talking then.
That's right. See, and they say, wait a minute, there's Brian right there. What's.
Hey.
But it's kind of fun. We didn't have that on the radio. And maybe some.
Right.
I think some programs may have that now. But the ability to preserve all the programs, for better or worse, this is the better one, but I mean, for better or worse, they're preserved. And people can listen, like next week, we're going to interview the author of a really neat book called The Ultimate Gift.
Hmm.
It's a it was made into a movie, possibly James Garner's last movie, called The Ultimate Gift, a real neat message movie. And I had met Jim Stovall several years ago at a conference and have talked to him a couple times since. But he's got a new book coming out called A Christmas Snow. And so he's agreed to come on next week and talk about his new book and help us all with some thinking about the legacy we leave to our families and our loved ones and, you know, doing proper kind of planning, not necessarily related to money and all that,
right,
but all the important things. Because you think about
the relationships.
Yeah, you think about the things that are important. And let's go back to your dad, a great guy. I'll bet you don't think about money when you think about your dad.
I bet you're right.
You know, and your mom.
Yeah.
Not to leave her out. She's a, you know, she was one of my listeners too. So,
well, that's very true.
I loved
true.
Your mom, of course.
not only that, she drove us to movies when we were
kids.
Right.
So, but we don't think about money.
No, yeah, you're right.
You think of, I mean, the important things. I mean, we have to have enough money. State has to have enough money to operate. You know,
right.
We have to audit to make sure that they're doing proper things. I have to have enough money to operate my law practice and to pay my mortgage payment. All that.
Right.
But the important things have nothing to do with money, even though, yes, money is important.
Bob, that's so absolutely true.
And so we're going to talk about that next week, and Jim is going to give us his insights. He is a neat guy. If you haven't run across him, Jim lost his eyesight in college, around the time of college, went on to become an Olympic weightlifter. He helped found the Narrative Television Network, which helps people who are sight impaired to be able to watch movies like The Ultimate Gift.
Wow.
A neat guy. He's just a fantastic, inspirational guy. I mean, you have to love the guy.
I'm looking forward to this.
Now, the neat thing is, see, next week we'll do that at 3 o'clock, like we do 3 o'clock Pacific time Wednesdays. But if a person misses it, it's going to be a podcast after that. So a person could go on later and say, oh, shoot, I missed the interview with Jim Stovall. You could listen to it and get, and Jim's going to impart some wisdom to us.
I love that.
Next week, and we'll have more information about the book that's coming out in October, and I think it's the movie's going directly to DVD. You know, fun. If a person hasn't read The Ultimate Gift, by the way, it's just a great book. It's a fun, easy read. Lay on the couch. The movie has James Garner as the billionaire who is now deceased, and he's left a video for his family, and especially for his grandson. And his grandson has to travel through these 12 steps, like value of family, value of friendship, value of hard work, things like that. Just a great, great book, great movie, and so I'm looking forward
to
hearing.
This has got sort of a little Scrooge and
yeah, a little, you know, just and Jim did a great job. And the book became I don't think he ever thought, from my discussions with him before, ever thought the book would go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it became a great hit, and people all over the country, certainly, and all over the world, probably are pick up copies of Ultimate Gift.
Oh, well, that's great.
So I'm looking forward.
To that.
So next week will be the new one. At the end of the month, we've got the author, one of the co-authors of one of my favorite, all-time favorite books, Neighbor Law.
Really?
I mean, we all love our neighbors. But there are, neighbor issues come. I mean, whenever you live next door to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
There are going to be issues that come up.
The fence line.
Oh, the overhanging branches. Whatever it might be. So Neighbor Law, and there'll be a link where you can locate the book, too. But it is, it's just amazing. Hey, we do actually, we have a caller. I've been here rambling on, but the program kind of started with all that and ran through. But we do have I thought we did. Okay. If we do again, we had someone who's wasn't able to hang on with us, darn it. Okay.
It might have been a wrong number.
My mistake. It might have been. You never know. People do. Hey, this is an attorney's office? Oh, no.
Oh, no. They're on the radio.
All right. Well,
you were mentioning neighbors, and for a long time, we had a next-door neighbor. This is when I'm a kid.
Uh-huh.
And my mom was kind of meticulous about her lawn.
Yeah.
And I had to mow the lawn every 3 days, and just right, and that's okay.
It was okay, except in December it was tough. But that's a different
It was
story.
Difficult, yes. But our next-door neighbor used to mow his lawn once a week, and he cut it really close.
Uh-oh.
And he would come over about a foot across the line, and that would shave down that much of Mom's yard and burn the grass.
Yeah.
She wasn't happy with that.
No.
There's your neighbor law.
Well, and you know, you can get into questions of adverse possession and all kinds of issues. If
so
someone,
because we didn't stop him, he actually owned that
well,
much of the yard?
There's an argument that there might have been easement by prescription.
Oh, man.
Your mom would have loved that.
It's probably just as well mom passed a few years ago.
Yeah, she might.
She wouldn't want to hear that.
No. She'll be calling me later to say, Bob.
Yeah, she might.
But neighbor questions, and I'm not saying that you know, a lot of other factors have to come to bear, mm-hmm. but sometimes things like that create rights for a neighbor. And so you have to always be careful. Neighbor questions, though, are just, I love them. And like I say, this book is the best book ever written about neighbor law. I mean, it's for non-lawyers.
Endless, I bet.
It is just terrific. And so we're going to be talking to there's a co-author now. We're going to talk to one of the co-authors of that book. And that'll be the last Wednesday of the month of September.
Great.
As we move into the next month, we have one of our topics will be the defending of the Green River Killer.
Oh.
And we're going to have the attorney on who defended and represented the Green River Killer.
Oh, interesting.
Which would be kind of fun. And we've also, I guess we can say it, Gary Alexander, the Supreme Court, was the Chief Justice, mm-hmm. who stepped down recently. Will be offering comments about all kinds. The fun thing is, for Justice Alexander, I think, is that he's not going to ever, he can't run anymore because he will have hit the age limit, which I kind of disagree with, by the way. For Supreme Court, I think when you move down the age continuum, not for everybody, certainly for him, but for some people, you might not. I mean, you really are able to deliberate better. And so if there's a difference between a Superior Court judge, District Court judge, Superior Court judge, and a Supreme Court justice,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the way things go, and your mind, I think, can be almost a little different.
They've got to be a little quicker at the Superior Court level. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, I think because you're really not a... I could get in so much trouble here.
I'm trying to help.
I know. But I just mean you're having to do... it's a different kind of... I mean, it's almost like combat, I almost think.
Well, and it's not that deliberative,
right.
process.
Yeah, as the Supreme Court, I mean, you get to... You pick and choose your cases pretty much.
Right.
You deliberate over these things. You hear arguments. You read the briefs, and you have time to deliberate. And so I quite frankly think someone I think the arbitrary age limit shouldn't be there myself,
right.
but it is there, and so
it isn't there for any other elected office.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, right? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, you could argue maybe that at some point someone should 110 or something, maybe you could.
Hey, if they're still around at 110, bless them. Run for office.
I think so. Anyway, so we have lots of good programs coming up, and as we get better known out on the internet and stuff, we'll be able to take more calls as we go along. Hey, I think we've got it'll take me some time here. I don't mind saying you're not supposed to talk about stumbling through any segments and stuff, but I don't mind doing it. And so we have a caller, and
wow.
So let's go right to Corey.
Help Jeff.
Corey, are you on?
Yes.
Hey, great. Thanks for calling in, Corey. You're on Legal Line, and you're talking to Brian Sontag, our Washington State Auditor. You have a question?
Yes, sir, Mr. Sontag. I know that recently we've been having some state budget issues, just like many other states out there. And I was just wondering kind of what the plan is to get that back under control and basically where your office has found maybe the most fiscal waste and what we're doing to improve the fiscal responsibility among our government officials.
Great question.
Oh, great question. We have found issues in our audits, our financial audits, as well as performance audits in a variety of government agencies. I mean, certainly the larger agencies, if it's Department of Social and Health Services, transportation, some of the bigger counties or cities, they handle the most money. You're going to find some of the largest savings there as well. The bigger question that you asked first has to do with the financial management and financial health of the state. And right now it's not very good. And I really believe it's because the legislature has punted on a lot of issues over the last few years. There are many unsustainable funds that the state has ignored for a number of years. For instance, of the, I think there's six or seven different pension systems for state employees, public employees in the state. Two of them, the two oldest ones for public employees and teachers, are underfunded.
Wow.
I mean, they're in the hole right now. And the state legislature has not made a contribution to either of those since 2001. Well, that's a big deal. And that's when times are pretty good financially.
Wow.
And they're not making those payments. You know, if they had been year after year after year, and you reach a couple of years like we've just had, then you might be able to say, well, let's defer payment for a couple of years while we focus someplace else. I think you could do that, but they're not doing that now.
Wow.
And I really think to get a grip on the state's finances right now, it's going to take some radical changes. And, you know, maybe this financial time is that opportunity to make that happen and to truly start with a blank sheet of paper. And what are state government's priorities? How do we meet the needs of citizens and their expectations? What can the state afford to do, and what can it no longer afford to do? And there's some tough questions in there, some difficult answers to face, but they've got to be made. And all of us who are in public office have a responsibility, an obligation to do just that. And so I think it's a big issue. I think it's the only issue facing the state right now, and that's to get the financial house in order.
You know, Brian, how do you get people to start talking about that, though? I mean, we're obviously, they
yeah.
listen to this, they'll hopefully think about it, but to get the public interested to even know to talk about it, and to try to get their representatives, senators, representatives, mm-hmm. and so forth, to talk about it and actually convene sessions where it's discussed. I mean, that's, of course, it's a pretty hot potato, I guess, that they would be taking on.
Well, it is. And I mean,
that
is the core of the problem, is the legislature convenes every year,
yeah.
and they patch holes. They cut a little here and they tax some more over there. And really, they defer the decision making each year. Their vision expires each November.
Boy.
And I really think it's got to be dealt with, and dealt with in a serious way. These financial conditions are not just going to go away and magically get better.
Right.
And we're either going to take these things on knowing that, or it's going to be mandatory, and then they're going to have to do it, and nobody wins if that's the case.
Oh. Are you ready to join a group there, Corey? You know,
after all that gloom and doom,
yeah.
I apologize for
that.
But Corey, you asked the great questions. What's the state going to do with these financial obligations out there? They're not paying the bills that they've got coming due. They're not cutting and reforming government where they need to. You at home can't spend more than however much money you've got coming in. Yet the state, I don't think, has realized that. They're going to have to realize it pretty soon. And it could wind up being very, very painful.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, thanks for the call, Corey.
Yeah, thank you for taking it.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much.
Bye.
Well, I think we're drawn to a close of this week's edition. But let me ask you, Brian, hopefully you'll come back again sometime.
Oh, man, anytime. This is home, too,
you know. That's right.
And, in fact, you mentioned Justice Alexander,
yeah.
former chief of the
right.
Supreme Court. The current chief.
Uh-huh.
Lives right here in Faircrest.
I didn't realize that.
Justice Barbara Madsen.
You know, she was a guest on Legal Line years ago
she
was running. It was when she was first running.
Yeah.
I have to sit back and think of what year that was. I won't do it. But,
96 or 2000
yeah.
or somewhere
she was
in there.
A guest because she had agreed to come on with the person running against her.
Mm.
And we had quite a lively discussion. You know, that's where we all need to... And I think the justices, I hope, would agree with me. We all need to do a really good job of really getting involved with our decisions on judges and getting good people like, you know, Barbara Madsen and Gary Alexander. I think we happen to be very fortunate in having a really good group on the court.
Oh, I do too. I think it's a pretty diverse bunch.
Yeah, it is.
And good people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that applies to all those other elected offices too.
Yeah.
And we've got elections coming up in,
we do.
In what, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
8 weeks from yesterday. And, you know, like Corey's question, anybody's question out there, how do they make a difference?
Yeah.
Get involved. Understand what the issues are. Make your voice heard.
Right.
Exercise your right to vote.
You really have to.
And, you know, collectively, that's how we make a difference.
No, it's an obligation. And we really, it's a solemn obligation. And we have to do it. And we're doing, you know, when you think of civics in general, I mean, even like our bill, we have a Bill of Rights project that will probably come out in October, which you helped us with, I know. And we've got... kind of a fun project there, but how, I mean, how many people can tell us the 10 amendments that are the core? I mean, talk about important laws, if you will. I mean, our Constitution, of course, but the 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights.
I can only recite them to you by number.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah, but
8 comes before 9.
That's good. That's and that's okay, too.
And I can get to all 10 that way.
There are people who can't go 1 to 10, so, unfortunately. So.
Well, thank goodness some places grade on a curve.
And we can thank Stadium High School for us being able to do that, I guess, you know. our fabulous math teachers and Jason Lee and Stadium.
Now, we better speak a little reverently of math teachers. I don't know if you remember Mel Chopp.
Yes.
At Stadium?
Yes.
Well, he's the brother of the Speaker of the House,
Frank
Chopp. So
he, of course, did a wonderful job.
He was great, wasn't he?
Wonderful job.
I'm trying to remember if I had him for math or homeroom, but whatever it was, he was super.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, shoot. All right, well, so we hope everybody's going to join us from week to week. If you happen to miss the live broadcast, you can catch us on the podcast, or if you insist on listening again, you can listen over and over on the podcast now.
How do I shut this thing off?
My computer's gone into meltdown.
They're still talking.
It just runs Bob over and over. We promise not to be a virus.
Hey, that would make it a Bobcast.
That's right, the Bobcast. Oh, I'm afraid to find out about the Bobcast. The next week's Bobcast will be really good, though, with Jim Stovall and you. And if people have questions for Jim, I mean, pick the book up. We're going to put, in fact, I'll ask Jeff to tomorrow get the book posted, information about the book posted at our website so people can pick that up. A Christmas Snow will be available in October, and we'll get that linked up as well so that people can find it. But next week's program will be lots of fun, and I think it will get us all to thinking about maybe more about what's important in life. But I really want to say thanks to Brian Sontag for hanging out with us, taking time to talk to all of us about important things in our lives. Government really is important. We cannot stick our head in a hole somewhere and say, I don't care, it doesn't affect me, because it really does. I mean, even that hole that you've got your head stuck into is
be
taxed.
Careful or somebody will tax it. Yes.
That's right. Well, it's probably being taxed right now.
Yes,
so,
at least once.
I was looking at a comment when I doing some work on the Bill of Rights stuff, and I was looking at one of the comments that was made by someone who was talking about passing the Constitution and everything, and they mentioned I'll try to bring the quote next week, but it was just right out of today. It was like, you know, be careful or they'll the tax collector be in your house taxing what you drink, taxing your what you sit on, which I mean, it's just
even bottled water,
even bottled water. Believe it or not.
They're taxing water.
It's hard to believe, but we're taxing water now. So lots of fun stuff to come, and we hope that all of you will join with us. Tell your friends. We have a Facebook presence at Legal Line with Bob Pittman on Facebook. Sign on. We appreciate that. We'll be posting information on Facebook. We'll probably, as soon as we get Twitter, everybody else has it figured out except me, but we'll be working with that. I know Brian's probably all into Twitter.
Oh,
now.
Yeah, throw one more at me. We got podcast, broadcast.
And now Twitter, yeah.
Do you have a Facebook thing, too?
Oh, yeah, just go to Facebook and punch in Legal Line with Bob Pittman, and you go right to it. And you can sign on our Facebook page, too. So
wow.
Do that and hang in with us as we get Legal Line with Bob Pittman started, cranked up here on the Legal Line Network. You can always go to bobpittman.com for more information. We've got a blog that I'll be blogging more as time goes on.
You can blog, you can Twitter, do everything on the Bobcast.
Absolutely, right at bobpittman.com. Thanks to all of you for being with us. Thanks to engineer, producer Jeff, and thanks to Brian once again, and thanks to all of you for listening. This is Bob Pittman for the Legal Line Network.